Like it, his skill on the motorcycle as a racer wouldn't scare me as much as the how smart he is.
Yeah.
But I think that if you're looking at 17-year-old James and Chad compared to a 17-year-old, you know, Hayden, he's just, life's different. And I think that that's probably what you see. And the you know, take the log, the laps, the take the time. We're in this for the long haul. We didn't think that way. I felt like we were like, you got to get on this pro team. You got to get these bonuses. I got to pay the bills for my mom and dad.
And why Chase, I felt like he was out there racing. It wasn't for this year. It was for next year. Like he needed to do it for his own self. So yeah, the motor stuff helped, but this guy that we saw, like that was a mental ride. Like that was a mental.
I think a 1-1 performance is 100% on the rider. I don't know that, you know, that I think that the bike was that far off.
What's up, guys? You know who it is, your boy JS7. And you know where we at? We at the Rewind Show, baby. Round 28 from Ironman, Indiana. First time I've ever been there. But the end of the championship, the last race, these guys can make it in before the playoffs. And we had a championship on the line in the 250. And we had somebody like Jet Lawrence still trying to go perfect with Chase Sexton, be able to end that streak. Or will Honda stay perfect and Chase win and Jet? Well, we found out this weekend. And to help us find out, because you know what we got to do, we got to get into it, I brought my boy Chad Reed up in here. So we've seen a lot of history. We've seen a lot of things happen this year. And now you get to see some more history with me and him being in the same room. So people, we're going to break it down together. So Ironman, round 28. Let's do it, Chad.
Awesome. Thanks, James. Excited to be here. Always seen it. Never actually been. Funny to think that I'm in your old house, but never thought I'd be allowed on the premises, but here we are. Excited, a really good track. It's fun to go to Ironman and see it without rain and mud. Cause I've actually only ever raced it in the mud.
Yeah.
I think my first time there was 2014, which was, I think the first time we had it, but, really good track, a lot of different changes. They've shortened it up a lot. I was there for the amateur combine. So we kind of get a preview of everything and you kind of get that feeling in the flow of like how the track prep's going and stuff like that. And so rain was expected Saturday morning. And so you could see the prep kind of already starting to happen for the combine stuff. And, overall it turned out to be a great race and good track and presented good racing.
Yeah, it was the first time I've ever been there, so it looks a lot different. I didn't realize how hilly it was on TV compared to how hilly it was in person compared to what it looks on TV, like especially where we were in the truck. It was we were up by the finish line, right behind the finish line, and if anybody watched the show, they saw me, you know, Hayden Deegan jumping from Mile High.
Love that kid. Gotta love it. Yeah, he can break JS concentration. So it was doable.
Oh, it was doable.
It was.
Okay.
It was dangerous, yeah, but it was doable.
But it goes down pretty severe right there. Like, so you can't really tell on the TV. They seem like this year they made this track really open. And I thought coming into this race that the places that in the 450 class, Chase Sexton was really good, that he was going to be like, this was going to be a strong suit, you know, not so many tight corners, more of a flowing racetrack. And we know how good Jet is in the tighter kind of more technical stuff. So as a racetrack and the way it's set up, I thought for sure it was going to be Chase's best opportunity to be able to knock him off. And since it was the last race, hometown, and he don't want to go out like that, like he was going to have his best opportunity out of everybody, but it didn't happen. Jet Lawrence was on another level. I feel like I've been able to watch Jet all year long. And to me, this was the best I think he looked on the 450. Like, I think he looked more complete. And I said before we started talking, it was the first time I saw Chase after that first moto interview that he didn't have anything else. Like, he was just kind of beat. Like, he didn't say, all right, he did say we're going to make changes on the bike, but you could just see it in his face. Like, before he's like, oh, I didn't ride as good. He was like, I don't even know. We're going to make some changes on the bike and I'm off to KTM, whatever it is. Like, that's how it was. So
being there, done that, right?
Yeah. But I think that was because of, Jet rode really good. So, Again, they switched up some of the sections in the years past after the Godzilla used to go down the hill and it was a switchback. They opened that part up. So the track was really fast. And again, they were doing 140. So I think they were like 19, 20 laps, which is a lot of laps on a motocross track. But overall, it was warm. You know, it was one of the warmer races of the year, but the track wasn't too rough. And we knew coming in that the championship for it was pretty much Hunter Lawrence. I mean, he had 22 points. Really, the only thing he needed to do was not blow it. You know, so going in that first moto, like he had an opportunity to either win it and kind of end that or, you know, just beat Justin Cooper at that point. So I know for me, like when we raced in 09, it was a different scenario because I had to get third. And the weekend before, we'll save it for another show, but we had a little drama. So I knew something was coming back towards me, some repercussion. But I don't know about you. Like, I think there's only one time in outdoors when I went undefeated that I had that sense of the championship. I just got to get through the race. Like, Hunter's mindset, like, what did you see coming in? Because you were on the track. Like, I saw it in the box. So, like, to me, it looked like he was just more letting whatever happen. He got a good start. He'll go for the race, win. Otherwise, he was just going to ride around, just kind of go what was happening. Is that what you saw?
I mean, you got to take the, you know, the previous 10 races of that, right? Like, and you understand that a bad start, you can still come back, put yourself solid into the top kind of six. So when you kind of, you know, you're somewhat playing with house money at that point, right?
Yeah.
22 points outside of a crash like Red Bud or an engine failure like Southwick.
Yeah.
I think it was in his hands. I was boots on the ground and had all eyes on Hunter on the start. And he was really bad off the gate. Like initially you could tell that it was never going to be good. And so I think that initially I was like, wow, this will be interesting to see how this plays off. He did the right thing. He made it through the turn, you know, cleanly, got back to the right. And then all hell just broke loose and it was a yard sale. And I just seen him get caught up in that. I didn't see that Justin was down or anything like that. And so my initial thinking was like, okay, that's a lot of work to do now. You know, like Justin typically is a good starter. He's probably out front. He's going to run, clean laps. And so I was, you know, initially like, wow, this is going to be hard. But then I obviously seen, you know, Justin down. And I think at that point it was kind of over because it's not a perfect case scenario, but for that situation, it was perfect case scenario. He was four or five bike lengths, you know, getting up ahead of Justin. And then from that point, he was always that five to six bikes ahead of him. Justin actually was probably one of Justin's, you know, least impressive rides.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Of the season. And I don't know if it was just, you know, wind out of the sails like thing, you know, like, oh my God, I'm on the ground, it's over. You know, or just, but it was an interesting ride from Justin's standpoint. He didn't really, you know, light the world on fire when he got up.
Yeah. I was actually, I think I mentioned that on TV cause he was only at one point, like one or two positions behind him. Like he was actually catching Hunter because Kitchen was there. Kitchen came up and it seemed like in the beginning part of that race that Hunter, like he saw that Justin went down and then he was like in the zone where he was like, okay, this is a good scenario, but I'm like, they were like 19th, 20. And he figured that the way he's riding, Justin was going to come because Hunter wasn't really passing anybody. So it seemed like he was really cautious, kind of like nervous, like the bad start would cause that as well. Like him being late off the gate, somebody not being like, I'm more concentrated on just not going down rather than like focusing and trying to get a start. So he was riding really tight and I felt like Justin was going to come, but dude, he was just like there. And then he just kind of just stayed there. And then Hunter saw that and he kind of started making his way up. But yeah, I was kind of disappointed in Justin just because look, dude, I mean, you know, the guys in the back and I don't know, I guess at that point, if you felt like you had a championship, an opportunity, like you just feel like you would come up and at least start messing with him, you know, and he didn't do that. And I do believe it was probably his worst ride of a race that he didn't fall. I mean, he went down in the first corner, but a race that he saw Hunter, that he couldn't do anything. And especially how you even rode the second motor, you rode way better the second motor. So yeah, I don't know what was up with Justin. I think the wins was out of his cell, for sure, but the opportunity was still in front of him to do something. And I mean, he just kind of rode around.
And Hunter was like the complete opposite. It was like ice in his veins, you know, like just never looked stressed, never looked, you know, on his back foot. And I think at that point, he probably understood. I believe he said it on the podium that he realized that Justin was one of the ones that was in the pileup.
Yeah.
And from that point, he just kind of picked them off one by one, you know, didn't stress and did really good. I did hear that they did an engine swap after that. So coming through wasn't all peaches either. You know, I think that there was some issues.
Really?
And you've been in that position like I have, right? Like, you hear everything in that engine, like every little bump, you know, you got Mooses in, but you're like, I can get in a flat tire.
No possible way, but I can still get it. No, that's for sure. Have you had a lot of time to talk to those guys? Have you been around them a lot?
So I'm back in Dade City and I'm planning on trying to, you know, get to know those guys a little more. It's kind of like, seems like our schedules, you know, when they first came here, I was obviously running a race team and, you know, fully immersed into it myself and things like that. But yeah, we haven't, you know, I obviously know them well, but not, you know, we're not super tight.
Yeah. And the reason I asked that, because you just said ice in the veins. And I feel like with Hunter, every interview and until I've met him, I always thought it was just what he was saying, you know, like even the Deegan comment, like he was like, well, like there was no animosity, you know, like he was just like, yeah, no, he did what he did. Like, and I think it was somebody else that he kind of got into it and he just kind of like played it off. But after like meeting him, like I realized that everything he's been through, all the injuries and stuff, like he's gotten a different perspective and almost kind of, I feel like what we got like towards the end of our career, where you started just appreciating the process more than result. And he's result driven for sure. Styles Robinson knows all about that. The kid wants to win, but I think the highs and lows are not up in there. So this scenario of him just going out and like doing it, I think he was okay with like whatever is going to happen is going to happen, not too much stress out on him. So he rode exactly like you just said, like no worries, just kind of like he was a little timid, but more just cautious, more than I'd say timid. And he was able to like do it. And what happened, what Deegan was a few weeks ago, I felt like that wouldn't bother him. Like while Deegan rode in Washougal, like it didn't bother him just because of all the stuff that he's been up and down. And he came back and, I mean, he was clearly the best guy all year long and he just kind of rode this thing out. But I think that race was actually fun for him. Like, you know, being in a position like, yeah, you worried about the bike, but I know that second moto was fun for him, but I think you're just like, all right, well.
Yeah, it just takes that stress away.
Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of like, you know, the what if, because we all play that, you know, you try not to acknowledge it, but it happens.
Yeah.
And I think that he just, like I said, just played it well, rode really solid. And I don't really think that the title was ever in jeopardy at that minute.
I know for a fact he didn't know he won the championship.
Yeah, I watched him come in and I think Johnny O was there right away and kind of, you know, I think it was Johnny O.
Yeah.
Was the first one. Yeah, Johnny O was the first one. And, you know, typical Johnny O fashion, he's just like, you know, I've been here, done this a few times with a few different people.
Dude, Johnny's so chill.
Go celebrate with your mechanic, you know?
Yeah, Johnny's so chill.
I thought that was pretty cool. I was standing in the box above that mechanics area and so I watched that whole thing go down and it's just, there's just no feeling like winning a title. It's so awesome, you know, and you get those chills while watching it and enjoying the different people within their circle enjoy that moment.
Yeah. One thing I know for me when I won, it was special to me, but I feel like what a lot of people on the outside don't recognize is that you feel like you win those titles and it's for the people around you, you know, like the ones that's been there, like supporting you, like, yeah, of course, like we want it and like, yeah, I've done that. But I think like we're family people, like how we grew up, we're real tight. You know, we kind of keep our circle pretty tight. So it's more, and the same thing with these guys, I feel like they celebrate and the excitement comes from watching dad or like the people around you, like you're winning it for them. And so that's kind of what I see. Like when you start celebrating with other people, that's when it really gets real. And for him, you know, it won't sink in until later on, you know, like I've won the championship, but that's the part I enjoy. Was like coming in and seeing the people around me smiling and they're happy and they feel like they won. And it was cool to watch that up in person, at least on the broadcast, but it was cool that you were down there as well.
Yeah. Makes that second moto feel way better too.
Yeah.
You know, like it actually, I think sometimes makes the moto feel longer,
yeah.
You know, cause it's like you accomplished a lot. And at that minute, you just, there's nothing on the line, right? Like, you've kind of like, there's not a perfect season. There's nothing to live up to at that point. It's just like, let's go out there and enjoy the moment. And I feel like sometimes that's when the race feels longer than normal, harder than normal. And you're like, okay, this, you know, you're just excited to get the thing over and done with.
Never die, never say die, never give up. And unbelievable. So happy and proud of my team.
Yeah, Joe Shimoda, Far East Coast, if you know him by the show. Dude, I've been struggling with him this year. Like, I've heard some insights around, like, Red Bud. Like, he was really struggling with the motorcycle. Like, you know, really uncomfortable. And I think he mentioned it a few times on the podium. But, man, these 250 kids, like I get it. Like, it's, they're pretty close on speed. Even Hunter, you know, like, there's not, like, a huge separation, like, between, like, the top. You just believe, like, Hunter just feels like he belongs there. And other guys know that. But, I mean, Levi Kitchen can run 11th. And then go out and run away the next moto. And so we saw that with Chance Hymus, like 18th. And then like be running top three, like you blown there. So Joe, like, dude, this, what he did this weekend was, to me, expected. Like, that's how he wrote last year. That's what I thought he was coming in. But I mean, from your standpoint, like, I mean, are you surprised at that or what?
You're not surprised, because I think that we all know what Joe is capable of. And it's always hard to comment, because I feel like we're savvy to information that is not necessarily, you know, what the public gets.
Yeah.
But from the little information that I would share is that, you know, there's people in that circle, in that corner, that just believe that if this Joe showed up, like, he'd be great.
Yeah.
But for some reason, you know, that Joe fought, you know, he finds it difficult to show up. But he just, at no point did he look vulnerable for not being anything but 1-1.
Yeah.
He was just so solid. The way he rode and raced forward, you know, I mean, Vial is a 2-time MX2 champion. Like, he's the real deal. And I think it's a very European track, as you've seen him be much more competitive this past weekend. And Joe just rode right through him. You know, Hayden was putting on a big charge. And even Hayden, you know, like, I later found out that he was sick, but for the most part, it looked like Hayden had his hands full to match that pace. You know?
No, I agree. That first moto, I thought Hayden was the danger guy. I didn't know he was sick, but he started closing up on him. And then Joe just kicked up a notch, went past Tom, and then just kind of rode off. So the guy that we saw, I think this was the best, even better than the motor that he got knocked down last year at Paula from the second motor he came out. It just looked like he was, like, all year was obsolete. He came here, he was solid, he knew he was going to win. And I think this, Hayden figured it out, Tom figured it out. I think they all were kind of like, damn, like, where this guy shows up. So, yeah, it's been interesting to watch it. I know Mitch, even on TV, said that they found some more motor stuff, but we both know that, the motor stuff helped, but this guy that we saw, like, that was a mental ride. Like, that was a mental.
I think a 1-1 performance is 100% on the rider. I don't know that, you know, that I think that the bike was that far off to not be able to go.
Yeah.
I think that as far as commenting on the bike, I think that you can see that four, you know, PC Cowies are there off at the start, and it's starting to look like 2005, 2006, like old times, you know. So Mitch is probably able to sleep a little bit at night. He just didn't have the riders that can bring it home outside of Joe.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was really just impressive. And he was just, he looked typical, I hate to say it, but Lawrence-ish, right?
Like, yes,
super, like, just effortless. He let it come to him. He was really smart. You know, both, you know, just kind of got it done the way that Jet and Hunter have been getting these things done. You know, it wasn't like it was like a Washougal hunted, you know, Hayden, sorry, and just full send.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, wow.
Yeah.
That's speed, you know? And it's like, it's kind of cool to see the speed sometimes, because it's hidden underneath the, you know, the current generate, you know, Lawrence-ish technique and how they ride and how they extract the speed. And so it was fun to see.
Well, speaking of Hayden, like, what did you think of all year? I mean, this race was pretty, I mean, we kind of know what happened. The championship wrapped up, and before we go into 450s, but all year, like, have you been impressed with Hayden? Like, how much he's grown? Because, I mean, I have. I go back from the Futures race at the first one. It was hanged A2.
Red. Oh, you're talking Supercross.
Yeah, Supercross this year. And to watch him like struggle, even during press day, like you could tell, like he had a lot of hype coming in. You know, we saw some practice videos that looked pretty good, but I mean, dude, he struggled. And he wasn't even like the second best guy at that race, you know, that that remote kid, Julian, and there were some other guys. And he crashed, but then he shows up at the Houston and was pretty good. He was all right. And then just watching him like kind of grow throughout this year to where he's at right now, you can see that confidence. And I'm impressed. I'm impressed. Like, I thought the kid was good. I didn't think he was ready at that point. But I also thought, like, after that Futures race, A2, he had no choice but to move up. Like, I don't think he could have just stayed there. I think Brian and those guys kind of realized that, look, let's just put him in there. He's talented enough. He'll figure it out. But I've been impressed. Like, what about you?
So, for me, I was really lucky to be around him a little bit, you know, with the Deegans, spending, you know, half of the year last year or, you know, let's call it 12 months in North Carolina. Mm. And so I was able to be exposed to him, be around him a little bit. And he's like all the good guys chasing greatness. You know, he's very clever. I think he's very driven, you know, he fights, he rides a lot. He's wired a certain way that I like, you know, mm-hmm. like I, and so for me, I wasn't surprised by the results. I was more surprised by how held back he was.
Really?
Like in the fact that he was, you know, he chipped away and it was like he listened. And at times I wished, because I had seen him behind, you know, practicing and things like that. I had seen that Washougal speed out of him. But I didn't see him really tapping into it and like going. And so for me as a fan and as a friend, like I was like, man, I just wish he would not listen at some point and just send it, you know, like just like, you know, it's there. And I think in your rookie year, and you could probably, you know, as far as like people coming in with pressure and hype, not sure that there's any bigger than you. And so you can relate to that. And it's like, I kind of wanted him to make mistakes, but see speed, not like just this calculated little 17-year-old kid. That's cool, but it's kind of boring, right? When I'm like, come on, let's unleash the beast a little bit. And Washougal, man, he put it all together. He put the clever, you know, kid that didn't make mistakes, plus the send. And I think since Washougal, though it on paper, it doesn't look like it went great, but I think he found an area to tap into, you know, for the rest of the season. And that was fun for me, like just as a pass racer and as a guy that sits there, and I've seen him rip some motos before. Like that was what I wanted to see.
Yeah. I didn't realize you spent that much time with him, like around him personally. So, that's cool. And do you think I definitely think the kid from Washougal, the results haven't said it, but the kid's riding better. I mean, I even think he's riding better now than he did at Washougal. You know, just
even this past weekend, right? Yeah. Like he has like what most people have in chasing that greatness. He learns very quickly, right? Like he's a sponge. He takes on the information. You know, he might mess up in one moto, but he comes back and fixes it the next. You know, by the sounds of it, he was sick this past weekend. It was really hot on Friday.
Yeah.
You know,
it was hot.
A little cooler on Saturday, but not a whole lot. And so just getting through that weekend and managing a race weekend, like those are the things that you put in the bank for your rookie season.
Yeah. I believe with him, I don't know if there was any race that he really messed up. You know, I mean, he had that Unadilla, but I mean, he was on the outside, and I've been impressed, because you go from, and as I was saying with the A2, like he crashed, and I mean, he had speed. He still wasn't the fastest, but I mean, he made mistakes. And then it seemed like just the insight that you just said, like the, just being solid and I wouldn't say he was afraid to make mistakes, but he was able to not do that, you know? And I've been impressed just how consistent he has been like all year. I mean, even just besides that, just him fighting, you know, if things start going wrong, like it's hard to find rookies, but hard to find any rider that can do that. Like things start going wrong, they start going backwards, but then keep fighting back up and getting a fifth instead of like a ninth or 11th or just crashing. He hasn't really made any mistakes. So now I think from Wash U, I think he believes that, like, when he's on, he feels like Hunter Lawrence and Cooper, that he can just outrun him. But I do feel like out of all those guys in the 250 class, you know, outside of, let's say, Hunter, he has a dog in him. Mm-hmm. And, like, from the outside coming in, like, I didn't know he had that. You know, just you think of YouTube and, you know, think of all this stuff. Like, I didn't see that side of him until he was riding around Jeremy Martin on the outside at Daytona. Until, like, he got into it with his teammate. Like, damn, all right. Like, it's good, want to win. And I just kind of seen that. So, my personal opinion, like, if he stays healthy, he's going to run away from those dudes next year. Like, he has the talent. I know there's some good futures guys coming in, but I don't see any separation from anybody coming in that's going to be like, dude, no, they're just clearly better. But I feel like I do see a separation in Hayden's mentality than the other ones. And I would just say, from that standpoint, if he rides like he did this year and improves, that kid's going to be legit.
And I think it's a mindset, right? Like, I think that the mindset was get in there, log the laps, which is always funny. You know, like, I'm the guy that sits on the couch at home that raced guys like yourself and Ricky, you guys doing the commentating. And it's always funny to me to hear the words that comes out of, like, all of our mouths. I'm guilty of it as well. But, like, Ricky in particular during Supercross, and it's like, you know, like, just log the laps. And it's like, when did we ever think like that as yeah. rookies, you know? Like, yeah. And it's always funny that
you haven't heard, like, that come out of my mouth, right?
You're like, you got your 40-year-old self, or 40-plus in Ricky's case. He's older than us. We're younger. But, like, you don't – that's not how you're wired. It's not how you think. And,
yeah.
And I hate that sometimes we put our 40-year-old self's head and try to put them on these younger kids' shoulders. Sometimes you want to see the full send.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I always feel like it's easier to tame the beast than to fire the beast up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, for sure.
So going off that point – you guys both came into sports super young, and seeing Hayden be young and have this mentality that you guys were just talking about, being pretty calculated, not making too many big risks or mistakes. Like, where do you see his ceiling being that, you know, you guys grew into these, you know, more mature racers and everything, that, where can he go?
I'll let you answer.
I mean, I think that the sky's the limit for anyone. It's a thought process, and I think champions are born, not built. And I think he's built that way. He wants to succeed in the sport. He wants to, you know, do it at a very high level. His perspective is so different than what ours was, I believe. Like, yeah. His upbringing, you know, he has a father that was very successful in moto. And then, you know, turned that into a freestyle motocross career.
Yeah.
And so he has an understanding that we never did.
Yeah.
We have that perspective today. But I think that if you're looking at 17-year-old James and Chad compared to a 17-year-old, you know, Hayden, he's just, life's different. And I think that that's probably what you see and take the log the laps, to take the time. We're in this for the long haul. We didn't think that way. I felt like we were like, you got to get on this pro team. You got to get these bonuses. I got to pay the bills for my mom and dad, you know, or my family in my case, with Ellie and everything like that. And I just think it's just a different thing, you know, like, he's 100% all in on just going racing and doing all that. And in life outside of that, he's okay. Right.
Yeah.
The Deegans are doing okay.
Yeah. No, that's actually a great point. And I think just to add on to that, like, when I look at Hayden and just kind of this generation in general, everything's different kind of compared to what we were, because it seems like the path is really laid out. Like, you know, and in Hayden's case, he has his dad who's been super successful. And is that he's seen, like, you got access to, you know, pro riders, facilities. So, you know, you kind of know what not to do and how to, like, do it compared to, like, when we did it. Like, it was like, well, I only see Ricky on the weekend or somebody on the weekend. Like, I don't have an opportunity to see what he does during the week to have it laid out. And these teams, like, we didn't have, for you, Yamaha having a facility where you basically, like,
look, dude, there's more of a roadmap now, I feel like. Like, now, like, I think at the highest level to win races, win titles, contend for wins and titles, I don't see it being done any differently. Like, when you see good guys like Jet, Eli, Chase, Hayden, they do what we all did, right? Yeah. Like they're student of the game. They work hard, all those things. I think that you can't be successful without those.
Absolutely.
But there's a roadmap
developing
very differently, and it's getting done differently. Like once upon a time, you had your facility here, you know, and it's funny, like I said, I'm here. This was off limits. Like you wouldn't even drive through Haines City from 2002 to when we retired, maybe even just a couple of years ago, it was like, you didn't even go there. And it's like, everyone asked me like about Tallahassee and I'm like, I've never been there.
Yeah.
It was off limits. You didn't go to Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. Where nowadays they're facilities, right? Yeah. Like they all ride and train together. I feel like we kind of handpicked our rabbits. And really that's how it was, right? Like we didn't necessarily ride with our teammates or, you know, the trainer had multiple guys. It was more that you handpicked your rabbits to be able to enjoy the moment with, and that were fun people to be around, and that they were just fast enough to
the chiz is adjacent JT's like
and you know Ricky, I think he had, you know, Ernesto there for a long time, Mike Brown. I just think it's done so differently, but yet it's still all the same.
Yeah. And do you feel like with Hayden, you know, he's up in that system, the farm or whatever you want to call it, but I still feel like there's a part where the guys that have that mentality, they still have somewhat of a separation. Like Eli, I don't know how much he spends, how much time he spends up there. And when I was working with Chase, like, I mean, I'm like at that point, one of his biggest competition was Roxon, and he was riding with him. And then he was riding with AC here. And I was telling him like, dude, there's gotta be some kind of separation. Like there's gotta be a fear from you guys. And I think the reason I say that is, not because like all of a sudden you're going to be faster than them, but I think that this sport is waiting for one guy to kind of come in with a Cooper Webb mentality or maybe Hayden's mentality and really take over it, because everybody's so close. But I think it really comes down to, as we saw, we were talking with Joe and same thing with Hayden. It's not that they're way faster, but Joe was in his zone this weekend, and what Hayden did at Wash Eagle, I think he mentally made himself go faster.
It's a mindset.
It's a mindset.
100% a mindset. Agree with you. Because like you said, like Joe, we're talking about the weekend, and it's like Joe showed up.
Yeah.
And we've seen what happens when Joe shows up. He's a 1-1 guy.
Yeah.
You know, and again, Hayden was sick and Hunter was in championship mode, and, you know, Justin Cooper. But for the most part, Joe crushed him.
I mean, the way he was riding, it would have been nice to see all three of those guys go at it. But, you know, I haven't really thrown Joe in that category. Is when, like, Justin Cooper's on it, he has that speed. Like, this guy, I mean, dude, he run with Hunter or any of those guys. But it's just been that way all year. But, yeah, I've been impressed. Again, I've been impressed with Hayden. I've liked the growth that I've seen. And I do remember, like, there was a point in 2002 that I think it was, like, I had the two DNFs. You won High Point, and I hurt my knee, and I had the Southwick, and I was sitting on the sidelines, and you were winning that race, and you popped your shoulder out. But then I came back, and I won the second moto, but it was the next race. I went down in the first corner at Red Butt and came out and basically came from last to 40th. I think you were still hurt. Came from last to second, or ran somebody down. But the belief, I took my chest pro off after that. You know, and then I was riding different, but it was something that clicked for me. And that's what I saw with Hayden at Washougal. So when I say we both here say like the kid's been riding different since then, even though the results are saying, you could just see the way he's riding. Like now he just feels like he belongs. So that's going to be pretty good. Overall, like you got a chance to work with the Moto Combine. Like who are you working with? One. And then like two, like who do you think is that next guy coming in?
Yeah, so the Moto Combines, basically they have, you essentially pick names out of a hat. Mm. It's really difficult, right? Like you don't want to, like all the guys these days, different from our day, is that they all have trainers. They all have these people around them that kind of already got these entourages. And love or hate that, it is what it is, right? And so you kind of pick their names out, and I was really fortunate to have 4 kids. I had Gavin Towers who went 1-1. But I think Gavin was expected. Like he's, you know, he's been to most of the other combines as far as like, or he's just, he's a more established guy.
Yeah.
I had some really, or a really young kid, you know, Landon Gibson, he's 14 years old. It was essentially his first big bike race. Yeah. And it was so fun. For me as a fan of the sport and a believing in the things I believe in, it was cool to see a 14-year-old kid just raw. Like after the first moto, he got a, you know, he got a good start. He was kind of fighting for P3 and then just got gnarly tired. and it was hot on Friday.
Yeah.
And
dude, so, it was hot. Yeah.
So after the race, you know, I kind of like, I'm like, okay, I'll go check on him. And he's for the most part cross-eyed and he's just like, he's, you know, he's like, I couldn't see straight. And he's like under the water. So he's completely getting wet. And he's like, oh my God, I don't have any spare underwear, you know? And I'm like, well, you don't want to ride the next moto in wet underwear. Yeah. That's not going to be fun. And so you just see this little kid that's super raw, totally unorganized, but can just rip on a dirt bike, you know? And I looked him in the eyes on the start line in the second moto and he was, I kind of sensed he was seeking my approval because everyone had kind of told him like, look, if you get tired, just pull it in, you know, mm-hmm. like we're 14 years old. We've got a long, you know, like we're in this for the long haul. And I get that.
Yeah.
But at some point there's only one individual twisting that throttle.
Yeah.
And as a rider, I think you can relate is that, you know, what you can and can't do.
Yeah.
And just like we said to Joe, like about Joe's mentality, if you show up and go, oh, I'm smoked. Like I'm probably going to do one or two laps and I'm going to pull it in.
Yeah.
You're going to do one or two laps yeah. and pull it in. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, you know what, today's not the day that I lay over, I'm going to make this 25 minutes plus two laps and it's going to be really hard. And you acknowledge that. And dude, the kid went out there and he fought every lap and he came from about seventh, eighth and got himself to, I think, six. And was catching some of the top guys. And I'm like, he was so done. Like, I feel like he was cross-eyed half the moto. But for me, like, that's my respect. Like, yeah. I love that. And so, yeah. like, there's a part of me that would love to put my arms around him and take him in because he is going to be talented. And I think that you're going to see a lot of people dive on and jump on the train. And, you know, but you just want him to be a kid and continue doing what he's doing.
You know, I think one thing with these kids, the unique opportunity, I just feel like, as we said, like, now everything's paved. Wouldn't say it's easier because I agree with you. Like you have to put in the work, but if you're willing to put in the work, you have every opportunity to succeed. And with this, like for a team or not to have the emphasis that Loretta's used to have, not saying it's not important because dude, when you win there, like you'll pretty much guarantee a ride, but you get that opportunity to come to these moto combines and then race on a track that everybody else, the professionals are racing with, you get a chance that if you have talent to go ride with Eli Tomac or, you know, Cooper Webb or whoever it is at that facility, Hayden Deegan's. But you also get a chance to race Supercross, you know, underneath the light. So I guess my point is it's so different and cool to see that if you really want to do it, you have every opportunity to succeed and you'll be exposed to what it's like. So to me, just listening to your story about that kid, like I'm with you. Like it ain't the opportunity that he's here. It's the fact that he went out there and did that. Like it's going to separate him. If he's going to make it, it's going to be because he was willing to go out there and suffer. And then what he saw was, man, I'm tired. But me being tired, I was still able to catch some of those guys in front of me. So that just mindset is going to help him. But I just think it's cool to watch our sport evolve on that, to at least give these guys the opportunity.
I always believe that like good and bad things are learned processes, right?
Yeah.
If you get tired and you listen to everybody and you just pull it in, that's a learned thing. So every time you get tired, shut it down.
Yeah.
We're done.
My dad used to say, dude, you quit once, you'll quit again. It's easy right? to quit the second
it's
time.
It's so yeah. much easier to quit the second time, the third yeah. time. And it's so... What that's what I love about seeing what Landon did this past weekend is that he didn't quit and he didn't necessarily, I think he was smart, but he didn't take the full advice of the people around him and, you yeah. know, and just like, oh, just pull it in. Like it's, we're not really here. We're playing the long game. No, like make that shit happen today. And I just love that. That's old school for
what
me.
What did you, so you said he was seeking your approval on the gate. Like, what did you say to him?
A lot of people, you know, like, there was people there telling him like, hey, like let's stick to the plan. You know, if you get tired, pull it in. If yeah. you start getting dizzy or cross-eyed, like pull it in. And And I don't want to be that guy that's advocating stupidity, right?
Violence. Son, yeah, but, die out there. Yeah, no, but
yeah. I've lived that life.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that there is moments when you don't know that you have another lap in you. You're hot, you're exhausted, but I promise you, if you dig deep, yeah, it's there. And if you tell yourself, I'm going to make it, you're going to make it. And if you'd want to, you know, you can either, you can go with the, I'm going to make it, or you can answer the bell of like, tap out. Like, yeah, it's hard, it's hot. And I love that he chose to fight on, to live, you know, to finish the moto.
Yeah, no, that's cool. We'll move on. But the Gavin Towers kid, a couple years ago, he was kind of Hayden Deegan, and then it was another Bennett, and then Kitchen. Those were the guys. And Gavin Towers was like right behind that. I think maybe he's a little bit younger. I remember watching him at, I think it was Mini O's. Watching the coverage. I mean, even the amateur nationals got coverage. Like, you can watch it like Supercross,
yeah,
which is cool. It's different in the day. But so he's the next guy that's coming in. Like him, and I know Julian, he just moved out.
Yep.
And I think the kid was actually running pretty good. Like, he was top 10.
Top 10 second moto, I believe.
Yeah. So is he moving up next year, or is he going to stay?
Who, Gavin?
Yeah.
So I believe Gavin Towers is basically on the Daxton Bennett program, mm, where he will be Star's amateur kid. I don't know this for sure, but just kind of what I'm figuring here is that I believe he will ride the amateur combines, or the, you know, combines during Supercross, the Futures.
Yeah.
And then they will kind of start readying him, and I'm sure that he has a performance-based deal like Bobby normally does with those kids. So he'll do all the combine stuff, do the Futures, do Loretta's, and then I think if he ticks all the boxes, they'll probably take him on as a pro for next year.
Yeah, gotcha. So when I showed up in the morning, I had to do an intro rap by that finish line. So I walked up to it, and I'm like, man, you know what? Why nobody's jumped this? Like, and I even thought about this in the past, but I think it was actually more of a double. You know, it was like, well, so you had to finish, and it was more of a double. So there's my intro, and I walked up, and I'm watching the guys ride in practice. I'm like, somebody should just send this thing. So I'm doing the video, the opening race day live with Jason, and watching practice. And all right, they were showing somebody roll around. So I started looking out the window, and I go, and I see Deegan like kind of do a wave. And I'm like, what's that's about? Maybe he's waving at me. You know, what up? Next thing you know, I see him come out the corner, and you know when somebody's like, hit something big, they like, you know, to get it. And dude, he just sends this thing. And I'm like, Jason's in the middle of talking about something. I full on like blackout, forgetting that he's actually calling, and we're on live TV calling the race in front of him. And I'm like trying to get his attention. Like, bro, like, why aren't you looking at this dude just sending the thing? And he's like reading, and he's like, looking. And I'm like, ooh, doing this. But when I seen that kid hit that, I was like stoked. And I apologize, people, my voice is still out. Take over, Chad. Do something. Talk about it.
That jump was totally doable. Like I said early in the show, my first time there was 2014, I believe. And that jump has not changed. Like, it's been like that the whole time. And it is. It's like you kind of look at it, and it's one of those jumps where you're like, it's totally doable. Let's just call it that. But does it really make sense? You know, and it's like, it's always a lot of what I call like wood chips, sawdust right there, as you can see on the face of that jump. I give him credit, because doing it once for the gram is one thing.
Yeah.
But he was sending it in. I didn't see him personally doing it in the first moto, but the second moto, like, he was straight sending it every lap.
Yeah.
And you know, I seen a couple of rear views of it, and he was just kind of coming over there and just sitting into it, seat balancing it like it was nothing. And man, it was, I feel like I know Hayden pretty well. And honestly, his nickname, Danger Boy, he's not dangerous. Like, he's a very calculated kid, but I think that danger is in there, and this was dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, maybe me and Hayden, we got something in common a little bit, because it's actually interesting to bring this point up, and not to dip into the past, but I want to bring, in 2003, when I was jumping that thing at Vegas, the over the triple.
Over the table.
Yeah, I remember you and RC saying that was a 125 jump. Uh-huh. And it could have been because, like, basically I had to go wide open. And sometimes that's easier than the 450 backing it out. But I'm telling you, dude, I walked up to it and it didn't seem hard to me. Like, I mean, just the fact that the optical illusion, like, it's a blind jump.
It falls away a lot. Yeah. Right.
But it's like, why ain't nobody hitting that? So when I seen him hitting it, and then, like, listen to your explanation. So maybe Hayden does got something that sense of, like, I don't know, like, you just, it's the doable, quads or whatever, it just makes sense to me. Like, I don't think about the wood chips and like, yeah, well, there's a lot that can go wrong. Like the wall jump at Daytona, it just made sense to my eyes. Like, why wouldn't you do it? And so, it was cool. And obviously the 450, those guys didn't even think about doing it. I don't even know if they thought that was even possible. But yeah, it was cool to watch Hayden do it. And that's why I was so excited, because I was almost relieved that I wasn't, like, tripping. I was that couch potato, fat guy on the couch. Like, oh, man, you could jump that. And he sent it. But yeah, I think he just figured out once he did it the first time, like, it's not as hard as he looked. And I think as it got drier, just easier for him. But,
and I think some jumps, like what you said, like, some jumps are easier on the little bike because they are full gas, right? Like, I remember having this conversation with you. Like, I was like, bro, like, why the quads all the time? Like, do we really go to quad? And you're like, well, it's just easier.
Yeah.
Because it's just like land on a 450, it's second gear wide kind of thing, you know, like where you, and when, like, third gear, you got to time it.
Yeah.
And so I do think that it's one of those 250F kind of, it comes out of a turn and it goes double, and then you just kind of sat into it. Where a 450, you would have had to really gauge the speed, and going short would be really bad, and I think going long. So I think that being that inch perfect that he had to be, the 250F just put him there. But that is in no means giving him, you know, discrediting him, because that jump was, it was pretty big. Even this camera, like, it looks big there, but in real life, let me tell you, it is huge.
Yeah. I don't know. It just makes sense. And I think in a 450, I mean, to be honest with you, if I was in my prime time, I would have just jumped to
that, next, to the next little down thing. Like the down part, right?
So the over jumping.
I know what you're thinking.
But to be honest with you, I could tell you, like, all of the jumps that I jumped, maybe there was like one or two that I was like, all right, like, that's sketchy, but they were all easier to do. Like, it was easier for me to jump quad, like you just said, like, it was easier for me to jump that than to do it the other way. It was safer in my head.
We'll agree to disagree on this one.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. All right. Well, we got that. So Hayden, you definitely get this doable moment of the year. You got the rookie of the year, you got the send of the year as well. But, no, that was cool. But the 250 class has been good all year. Congratulations, Hunter Lawrence. And yeah, I almost forgot. This is what we do every year. And this is every weekend. And last weekend, we said that he came back. He got the first one. Like, the weekend prior at Unadilla, he went 2-2 and he got it. And it was a weird thing, because it was like, how can you get, like, a, you know, neck burn, whatever it is, and you don't even win? And I said, that's like stool. That's dominant. That's how dominant he was. And then he came back at Bud's Creek, and then Justin Cooper, like, he hit him, and then he got on podium. He said, well, whatever, what it was. And then this weekend he came in and he was like, man, maybe I should just go out and try to win the race or not. And then Justin Cooper fell over, and then Justin Cooper was back there. He thought maybe it was the kitchen, but it was this guy and that guy. And he just started riding around. He was just having a good time. But Hunter Lawrence, I know that all that was nothing, and it probably made no sense. And I jumped from Hayden Deegan sending it to this section, so now it's going to make sense. But from here, Chad's going to be a part of this too. I'm going to throw him in that. We got to give you something special. Kit, you dominated this year, Supercross Championship. You're crowned on the podium there. And I don't even know if you were crowned on the podium here. Had a nice Hunter t-shirt. I like that, by the way. But here, I want to give you something special. You are your 2023 AMA Motocross Champion, and this is, although you didn't get the official neck burn this weekend, we're going to give it out to somebody else. You're going to get the ultimate neck burn. So hit it for him, Cole.
Suntan, neck's on fire.
And I don't even know what, Chad, you got to give him some kind of congratulations on there. He's a champion. He got, what, six? What did he finish the motos, Cole? You're supposed to be on this.
What do you do back there? I mean, hey.
What do you do back there?
Hey, Cole's slacking over.
You are the one that's actually at the races. That's the thing here.
Yeah, but he only sees the screen.
You're right, man. Like, I come in, I watch this. I'm watching it for, like, the first time, even though I just seen it. It's a lot you miss.
Or did he go 5-9?
Five, nine.
For five.
Oh, I see it.
Wait a minute.
Oh, I didn't know that he got ninth in the last one. So it went 5-9. Got it.
That's the AMA math. 5-9 equals 5. Yeah. 13-2 equals 4. Yeah. So you got it. In chat, I know you want to hit him with a neck burn or something. Hit it for it for chat, please.
Well, the neck burn's yours. All right. I think the biggest thing is like they don't give titles away. They don't give those, you know, black and white number plates away. So congrats, because that was an awesome comeback. You know, especially from laying on the ground, you know, and he entered the season. Let's really go back to the beginning. He entered hurt and beat up.
Yeah.
He wasn't riding during the week, and he persevered and, you know, and stuck to the plan. And he was just, I think he was just smart, and he was ahead of the game. He won when he needed to win, and he was, you know, second for the most part when he needed to be second. And when you win titles, you gotta stack those points early on. And when you stack them, you gotta stack them high, and he did it. And so congrats, Hunter.
Famous words. I used to hate him. You gotta be in it to win it, man. The halftime, I wasn't in it. That's why I was like, I hate that. But no, that's cool. Well deserved. And also, no, you got to do this too, because this is the first time, well, second time he's got it this year, but the first time, I believe, Joe, this is the first 1-1 he's ever had, right?
I believe you're right.
Yeah, I thought so. So we've been talking about his championship guy, and we expected this, but Joe hasn't done this all this year, even the Southwick. He got it, but, you know, it was sketchy, a little muddy line, but this weekend he came in strong. It was Joe time, as one buddy says. So, Joe Shimoda, we ain't gonna forget you. And I should say it, but I don't think Cole will be ready. Last time we did it, we had it said in Japanese. We'll have to throw that part in there, but he ain't ready for this, so we'll give you a neck burn. Joe, it's finally. You listen. You didn't have to pass too many people, but you passed a couple, and you didn't have to take a bitch out, because I've been telling you to do that all year long, but you don't got to take them out when you're that fast. So, Joe, hit it for him, Cole.
Suntan, neck's on fire.
Neck was definitely on fire. That was Far East Coast. All right, people, that was it of the 250 class. Congrats, Hunter. Well-deserved. You already know. I'll take you out on the golf course, smack you up. But let's talk about your brother and Chase Sexton. We've been watching Jet Lawrence undefeated. He wrapped that thing up this weekend. But all year, it's been kind of a little bit of talking about, well, who's not been there? You know, if Eli was there, would he have been undefeated? If Chase was there the whole year, would he do it? There was more guys out this year. But I believe we watched Jet continue to get better. And we saw Chase, I think, this weekend really kind of basically give it everything he got. And that was kind of, he didn't have anything. So when you watch him, like, do you feel like he is as dominant as his results say he is, like being undefeated? Or do you feel like this is a circumstance of just competition? Or is he as dominant when you watch him?
I think that, you know, like watching it on TV, you get one perspective. Going to the race this weekend and seeing, you know, kind of like just being able to hear the engine, hear and see the things that you see at a very high level. I think that Jet's that dominant, you know, like I think that you have to take the data that you have to work with.
Yeah.
And watching his, you know, 250 career, did I think he was going to come in and go 22-0? Absolutely not. I don't know that any of us, I don't know that he believed that. I thought watching his 250 career, he learned a way of being able to be really patient. He wasn't as dominant. Like, let's be honest, he really wasn't that dominant on the 250 as much as he is on the 450.
Yeah.
And so coming in, I thought weakness that he was going to have was not so much the start, but starts and just dropping the hammer and going. And he completely proved me wrong. Like he played that role in the 250 because he could. And so it was always masked and I just wasn't sure that he could answer the bell and drop the hammer and go from the beginning. And oh my gosh, like that was his strength, right? He, whenever needed to, whenever Chase got a good start or anything like that, he just was able to wick it up. And personally speaking, from boots on the ground this past weekend, you hear like all the technique, the way he rides a motorcycle, but he actually revs it just like we all did.
Yeah.
You know, like when you listen to him come by, it's not like it's Stefan Evans and he's a gear higher than everybody.
Yeah.
He actually is riding the motorcycle in the way that it's always been ridden at the high level. Yeah. And I was a little bit surprised by that, cause I kind of was, you know, picturing this Stefan Evans-ish stand everywhere, be a gear higher, but he come by me the first couple laps of practice and the thing was, you know, kind of pretty high in the RPM. I'm like, oh
yeah,
he he's just like us, you know. But man, just yeah, did not expect 22-0, but I wasn't at all surprised that he was good. I think he was on the bike majority of the year, and maybe that's why we seen weakness on the 250, because he was actually spending so much time on the 450.
Yeah.
But really, really, really impressive, and just fun to watch. You know, he makes it look enjoyable, and
yeah,
and makes you want to get back out there.
I don't know about all that, but you know, yeah, I hear you. When I watch him, I feel like he's more in tune. Like he's a student at his four, like he's in tune, like obviously what him, but I think he's really, his strongest part is the knowledge of like the guys around him, you know? And I say that because I feel like the difference between a 250 and 450, I think the 450 is actually made what he does good on 250. Like it's a lot easier for him to do it. And I've spoken to him and asked him, like, he feels the same way. He feels like it's more comfortable. So how he rides a motorcycle, I would say kind of like the two stroke and four stroke for you. Like it was, you look like a different rider on the two stroke. You know, I watched you in 03 and I'm like, damn, dude, like I got to go up against that. And then it just seemed like the 450, like it took you a little bit. It was a different riding style. So
it was a tough transition.
Yeah. So I feel like that's been that transition with Jet to where, I'll be honest with you, I don't think he would be undefeated in 250 class this year. Like, I don't think he would beat Hunter 22 times in a row. And he wasn't even as dominant earlier this year in the 250 class in Supercross. So I believe we watched a kid come in, was able to win that first race. Chase went out. That was his biggest competition. And, like, he's been able to learn how to race. Roxanne was a threat. But he was preparing himself to when Chase got back. You know, he was already built that you know, that race pace up, and then he elevated his game when Chase got there. And then as Chase got better, he was able to get better because he's just that talented. But I think he's really just, again, a student of sport, because it's not like he goes fast in the beginning part of the race. I think what he does well is that he knows, I just need to be in front of Chase. And you can see him, like, if he doesn't get the start, there's certain people he'll pass really quick. Like, he does that to Chase. I don't think he wants to have to pick up that pace, that weakness that probably was in the 250 class of being able to drop the hammer. I believe that's still there. But what he's doing is stopping Chase from being able to run away so he doesn't have to, like, pick up that pace and ride at that. Because if you watch Jet, like, all his lap times, like, the fastest part of his race isn't, like, the first couple laps. It's, like, lap 4, 5, 6. Then that's when he'll pick it up. So it looks like he has a burst of speed, gets in front of Chase, because he'll follow Aaron for a little bit or somebody else. But Chase, he knows if Chase gets out, he can run, and then he has to go chase him. So I think he gets in front of him, then slows down, warms up. And then at that point, then he starts kicking into gear. But I just been more impressed of every time that this weekend Chase lined up next to him on the start. Dude, straight up, best start of the year. Just whole shot. Chase is still sitting on the gate, people. I think he's still sitting there, you know, and I've been saying it on the show is that he's doing a good job at putting Chase and making Chase be on the defense in a sense.
He, like, broke Chase, I think, yeah, you know.
Like, he broke him this weekend.
I think he totally broke him. And I think you have to go back to the start. And the fact that I was there this weekend, I was able to kind of take in the whole weekend. And it's like Chase came out, I feel, with a mindset of like, this is it, right? Like, we're going to get it done this weekend. Yeah. And you could tell in the first practice, he kind of always had the upper hand on Jet. I wasn't in the pits during the practices, so I don't know what changes Jet made. But watching the 251 kind of gives you a good understanding of like how the 451 is going to go. They were 2 seconds off of their times. So we're kind of like, ooh, you know, like, I don't, the lap time's not going to be there in the second one. Damn, were we wrong? Like, I think that was the coming, that was the strongest Jet that I seen. He went out there and straight flexed on Chase and laid down a 46, you know, like, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe from my memory is that Chase had kind of gone out and did a 48, and then maybe got into the 47s.
Yeah.
And at that minute, it was like, wow.
Yeah,
that time was not expected. And Jet just went out and just straight flexed at a 46.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, oh, wow. You know, like that's,
yeah.
And it brings back the memories, right? Like it's hard to not bring those memories back of just us flexing. And I call it the stretching competition, you know, I can't say the word, but you know, like it was like, that was it, you know, you're just out there stretching it and trying to feel like you're just like, I'm the guy. Yeah. And man, those days are fun. Like, yeah, let's be honest.
They were fun. I mean, I was talking about this a few weeks ago. There was a Daytona one where you were like a second faster and I couldn't figure it out. And then I went back and motorhome went to sleep because I was like, this is a dream. Like this ain't right. So yeah, I do believe this weekend, as I said earlier, it was the best I've seen Jet ride the 450. Like it was we've been talking about like Chase has been faster in a lot of spots, but a lot of races, but Chase, you know, by being faster, he just makes more mistakes, blah, blah, blah. It's hard for him to put it together. But this weekend, at no point did I say, I think he's going to catch him. Like Chase is faster. Jet just seemed like he was elevated. And the fact is he had the 22-0, the championship perfect, being perfect on the line. But I think the one thing that we kind of don't think about is that I think when I did it, like I knew the only way I was going to lose is if I just fell in the first corner and just bad luck. Like it was pretty much on me to lose it. Where I think Jet understands that Chase is good enough to, if he doesn't focus and goes out and rods, like he'll just get beat straight up, you know, like where me and Ricky, we didn't have that. Like he didn't have that fear, I guess I didn't in 2008. So he always had to stay focused. And I think it made it easier for him in a sense of like, there wasn't so much pressure of like, literally like you're going to come in and everybody just expects you to win. Like everything. Even when you win, it's like, oh, I mean, what the hell do you think you're supposed to do? I think Jet, there was some kind of like, dude, you got to go out and execute. So this weekend, I think he was more focused. And when Chase lined up next to him, he probably figured out what he was going to do. And he really did go out from that practice and he broke him. And then that first moto, he broke him and Chase came up on the podium and you could just see it in his face. And especially that second moto, like he had no answer. Like, I don't even know, I guess we make changes on the bike. And in the second moto, like we were talking off camera, it looked like, I'll say it for you. He was like, whatever. Like, dude, I'm done. I'm just happy to be done with this. I'm going to win in the future. Like almost like convincing himself that the reason this was happening was it wasn't him. It wasn't Jet. Jet's good, but I'm going to be on a new team. I'm going to be in new circumstances and everything's going to change because you got to tell yourself something. And dude, I tell people all the time about you. I've been so impressed. And the one aspect of you that is so underrated to most is how resilient you are, like, and how much belief that you've always had in like yourself, no matter what happened, no matter like how practice went or heat race, dude, you could somehow come out and just show up even after just getting your ass handed to you. And that made me afraid of you. Like I just knew no matter what, this dude has a confidence in himself to be able to just erase what just happened. And no matter how much the punches come, like he'll still show up. And that's hard to teach. And I feel like with Chase was trying to tap in that a little bit, saying like, you know what, just erase the thing, I'm moving on. And so Jet is going back to the original question. To me, I think we watched the rider just get better and better as the year went on. I don't see anything that's transcendent, like what you kind of said, like a little bit, like he doesn't ride the bike in a different, like something I've never seen. I just feel like he's more of a student of the sport to where his biggest attribute is his knowing his competition. And I think that's the part that's kind of been missing in the sport, really that separation of like, look, just really grinding the work and just finding those inches in the studying and knowing the other guys more than compared to anybody else. So I just watched this guy and believe that, look, we're watching a kid who's starting to put this thing together, and Chase needed to at least to have a chance at beating him like next year. Not saying he can't, but Chase needed to stop him, because what Jet was doing and why Chase, I felt like he was out there racing, it wasn't for this year. It was for next year. Like he needed to do it for his own self. So I'm impressed by him. It sounds like you are as well. I think we talk about him a lot on TV and saying, oh, the way he jumps, and he does some cool stuff, some things that I'm impressed with. But I think Jet's been in a position to be able to take the best of you, best of me, best of RC, and put this in the one and go out there and execute. And I think that's what we're watching. So
yeah, and I think it all comes down to the same thing as like the what I take from you is it's a student of the game. You know, I know that I watched film, I watched video, I watched, you know, current, I watched old. You love it. You log and log and log data, right? And I think that it's the perfect way to put what Jet is. Jet is a blend of everything. You know, he's very clever. And he's even tapping into, he's even a blend of Stefan Evetts in yeah. Europe and things like that. And I think that his background and the, you know, the family's transition from Australia to Europe to America, you're starting to see it all come to the surface, and the kid is great. You know, like I think he's very clever. And that's probably the biggest thing. Like his skill on the motorcycle as a racer wouldn't scare me as much as the how smart he is.
Yeah.
I think that that's what I believe, you know, talking about 2024 and big picture, that's where Eli, Chase, and whoever else wants to answer the bell to come and fight with Jet is that they're going to have to take on a very, very clever, clever, talented. And those two combined, and he works hard. It's not like he has, I hate to say it, but like a Kevin Windham, right? We all talked about how clever Kevin Windham was, but he fell short on sometimes the work ethic and simply just getting the job done. And so Jet doesn't have those weaknesses, and that's what's going to be really challenging, I think, for the rest of the field to, you know, to hold him back.
Yeah, 100%. Do you feel like it's next year he's the favorite?
I think you have to assume that.
Yeah.
I think that Supercross is always a different beast, but going off of my word of the day data tells us that he's not very weak at Supercross either, right?
He might be better at that.
He might even be better at that. Jet has made changes to his riding style and technique over the last year. You know, I actually had a conversation with his dad one day out at the property, and I just said that, like, I believe outside of you have to have a finger on the clutch in the whoops on a 450. Unless you're just going to go stupid commitment and just not even think about it and go ridiculously fast through him like you successfully did, majority of the time. I just don't think it's the skill that wins you championships. And so we had that conversation, and anyway, I noticed that he rides around with a finger on the clutch these days. So
did he used to not ride with it?
I never seen him with a finger on the clutch, and I always felt that was possibly, you know, and if you kind of look back and, I was actually at his first ever Supercross race in Australia, when he kind of was almost like his first pro race before Anaheim and stuff like that. And he did an off season race, and his weakness was whoops. Like, that kid was not afraid to send it in there, but had kind of no idea what he was doing.
And
he quickly, you know, and as history showed us, like, that was his weakness. The race that he had a shot at winning at Anaheim 2 or 3 or whatever that was, when he broke his collarbone and knocked himself out. Like, that was a whoop crash.
Yeah.
And I think from that, you know, and again, like, you can either continue to make those mistakes or you can be a student and you can acknowledge that there's weakness there and you fix it. And man, did he fix it? And his strong point was whoops and things like that. And so that's where I look at Jet as he's just a complete package, and it's rare that we get the complete package these days.
Yeah, and he's also racing. He's practicing with a kid. I mean, his brother. I mean, not a kid, but he's practicing with the 250 champion, and which probably is going to be his biggest competition as well. You know, at some point, his brother is going to be that guy. So that's me. My bad. Train horn.
Rookie.
Yeah, it is a rookie move. But I think Jet has the luxury of when you're practicing against the best 250 guy at home. Then you got another guy in the rookie that was this year, Chance Hymus. So you have another fast young rookie, and you see him taking after those guys as well. So I think his whole scenario, and I mentioned this before, it's like it's hard to beat a guy that, like, all he does is practice. His practice is like racing in a sense. Like he's got that level, that guy who's the fastest in 250, probably can probably podium in the 450 class of where he is at home week in and week out. And then his biggest competition is on his same motorcycle as his teammate. And I feel like you're like, well, I think I'm better than him as a rider mindset. So it just makes it hard to beat a guy like that. And so going into Supercross, I gotta believe he is the favorite, just considering that everybody that's I can think of that would be his biggest challenge. Like Eli's coming back from an injury.
Eli's a question mark, right?
Yeah.
Like I think it's I don't question his ability to win races and contend for the championship. We just need to know the level and the commitment that Eli's willing to go to. You know, I think that it was well known and kind of appreciated that that was possibly his last season this year.
Yeah.
And so where's his head at? Like, is he really in it to win it? Is it business? Does he come out fighting, you know, and we see the best ever Eli? Because I think at times last year we did see the better, best version of Eli. I think the new Yamaha has some strengths that, you know, seem to help him, but then he had some things that were maybe not as good. And I think and assume that they fixed those during the off season. But yeah, so I think that looking forward, it's exciting for us.
Yeah.
Armchair races to watch the races and, you know, talk about what used to be.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so just like this outdoor season, it's been a, you got Chase changing teams. Cooper changing teams, Eli coming back, that's a question mark. So I feel like, and his brother being a rookie coming in the 450 class, I think he will adapt to the 450 just like Jet did. Everything's kind of playing up to where I almost feel like it's a little bit like the outdoors. Like if he's able to come out, jump on those guys and set that tone in the beginning, then it's a lot of confidence for him, but catching up with others. The question mark is, I don't know what Dylan Ferrand is. I don't know what he's doing next year. I don't feel like the guy, Justin Cooper, I mean, eventually he'll be a threat maybe, but not.
I got a question for you. So we've all been there at certain different points of our career, right? I have not. Do you flex on, you know what? I'm a little disappointed in you that you didn't flex on Jet in the post show, you know, because you are 24-0, not 22-0, right? No, it's funny.
Yeah.
I just thought that you'd flex on him a little bit while you can.
Well, that's because if he wins these playoffs, he can be 25.
Could be 25.
So see,
you don't want to flex before. It's
I don't
want to
flex and then be like, my bad. So see, I know the possibility. See, I'm a student of the game. Math is I can count to 25. So yeah.
But my question is as a rookie, it was a big year, right? Like let's acknowledge just how impressive that was and how clever and how fast and just overall. And I don't necessarily believe it matters what happens in these next three races. I think that, but how does that, like going into a Supercross season, you know, like I don't see it on the wall in here, but there was a poster on Racer X one day. It was like, your whole life was about January 8th, right? And then the big storm.
Yeah.
It rains and we all, that it was kind of like our first time all on big bikes.
Yeah.
But Supercross is a different beast. Yeah. Like in your mind, because we've lived it, like the things that he's going to have and the expectations he's going to have, it's not going to, not that I don't, you know, I'm not insinuating that he can't handle it, but it's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like he's going to go in there with that expectation of perfect, you know, anything short of perfect is a letdown. And I think he's clever enough to not necessarily, you know, have that kind of pressure. But I think that I always believe human first, athlete second.
Yeah.
And I think it's human nature that he wants to be perfect. He wants to be great. And so that's going to be a lot of expectation for him.
Yeah. No, that's a great point.
Look at that picture.
Yeah. I mean, my whole life was about that. I'm telling you, dude.
I'm just up there by your head again.
Yeah.
I'm about to mow you down.
You probably, I don't even know what you're doing. I'm like, what are you doing? And I think, you know, going into that, like it was the first time. And kind of like maybe with Jet, but I didn't lose like my whole like career. Like I was able to win amateurs, 125 class. I was able to win. So I really thought I was going to walk in that season and just run over you guys. Like literally. And then we showed up at the first race. It rains. I crashed. I think you end up DNFing because
I was 16. My front brake got stuck.
Your front brake got stuck in there. But then I go to Phoenix and like it, I was fast, you know, I ended up getting hurt. So even then it didn't really, I thought I'd come back to Orlando. Orlando was kind of like, all right, damn, they're all right. Like they're pretty good. But I guess my point is kind of with Jet, I feel like he's going to have that pressure, but unlike where I came in and really was all about, like the first time I lost, it was a big hit to me. He's already been in that spot.
He has. Yeah.
And so his downfall, the only thing that will stop him if he allows that to get to him, you know, and if he can't handle that, because it's to your point, like it is going to be real. I almost feel like in a sense, he'd be better losing these playoffs, you know, then he doesn't have to continue. Like now he's perfect since he's been on a 450, you know, living on that streak.
Living what we lived.
Yeah.
There's a part of me, I 100% agree with you. And I hope he wins. I think he's a deserving champion. But it is, in a lot of ways, when you look at the big picture and you're almost 40, but our 40-year-old selves, you do. You see the picture, right? Yeah. And you're like, man, it's going to be a lot on that, you know, on that kid's shoulders. And I hope that, and I believe he has the right people around him. Johnny O is an awesome, you know, guy to have in his corner. I think his mom and dad are really clever, and I think there'll be a lot of emphasis on his brother's rookie season and things like that.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that I've noticed when I've met those guys is that they're able to still, and they believe it, they're able to still keep reality in check. You know, like he's undefeated, blah blah blah. But I mean, even this weekend, he just went 22-0 as a rookie. The first thing that came out of his mouth was his brother, you know, and they really are about each other. So I think that the, like, as you said, like Johnny won't let him believe in the hype. His dad's that way. His brother's that way, that they'll somewhat keep him like, dude, you're good, but tame. And then I feel like my dad was good at doing that as well. Like he would always, like, he wouldn't allow me to believe I was as good as I was. You know, he always bring me back to earth. So the reason I feel like it might not get to him as much as maybe some others is because of those people around him. Like, and he has a lot going for him. And then from that standpoint, I think even besides if it was a lot of pressure, I think the people that he's going to be racing against coming in, they're going to have just as much in a different way. Like Eli's, I mean, hate to say it, but that Achilles injury, I don't even think the injury is going to be the biggest thing. It's going to be the mental part and the fact that the way he did it, you know, like it's the, you know how we know, like it's the crashes that you're like,
I can just go one way or the other, right? Like, I don't really think it's either good or it's bad.
Yeah.
Like your knee, you came back just as strong, if not stronger.
Yeah.
You know, like I've done the same, and I think it's just, I don't think that Eli's going to come back, you know, weaker, but there is, it's just, you never know where people's heads are at. And, you know, he's obviously in his 30s now and about to have three kids. And you just, it's different.
I think,
you know?
Yeah, it's different. And I think the fact is the way he popped it, it's going to be tough. Like, cause I mean, again, he didn't do anything really wrong, and knowing a little bit about the Achilles, it's probably going to happen again. You know, like it's one of those injuries that don't, actually got to talk to a doctor this weekend and I was asking him more questions off the air. And he was like, no, it's not an injury that actually, like your knee, you put it back in, you know, you can pop it, whatever, but it's not like it's going to get weak and pop, where the Achilles is a different animal. Like eventually it's never going to be the same. And it's always, the more stress you're going to put, it's eventually going to happen again. So the question for that is not saying that it could be a year, it could be 5 years, and hopefully it never happens. But I guess the mindset with Eli, the fact that he was thinking about quitting 2 years ago, and he came back, like, you got to wonder where he's at mentally. And then the fact with that injury, you see Jet Lawrence, now you see Chase Sexton, the Cooper Webbs on your team. There's just a lot going for me. And then, we know, when you have kids, it's just a different mindset on things. So the whole point is, I think Jet, even if there is a lot of pressure, everybody else around him has just as much on him, trying to prove that themselves. So they'll all kind of be equal. And I feel like with Jet, I do believe that he's mentally able to handle it. And I think he believes that his biggest competition, probably from a standpoint of technical and good, is his brother. Mm-hmm. And they ride during the week. So
I think his brother and Eli are who he fears most.
Yeah.
I do believe that. You know, I think that the little things that I've heard and listened to, it's, you know, he was disappointed that Eli was hurt this year. You know, I think he was up for the challenge, and I know that from my point of view, you know, like just winning races when you're main guys are not there, like there's always a sense of like you ready to take on, you know, take on that challenge.
One thing, so we talked about Jet. I want to bring up, because you said this before the show, as we were talking, Jet Chase's mindset, and we kind of heard it through his podium interview, like almost depleted. Like I heard a defeated rider after the first moto, but then I heard a rider that basically pulled a tear off. I'm going to win, be back, psyched himself up, new team. Chase getting second so much this year, and I've been strong on this, is like, dude, a lot of this stuff that he's doing, he's got to prove to himself, you know, that he can beat Jet, whether he's able to lead a lap, you know, whether he wins overall or not, just beating him for himself so he knows going into next year. Do you feel like this off season, what happened this motocross season, like, do you feel like Chase would be able to recover from that? And the reason I bring that up is because, like you, like I said, no matter how many times like you got beat, you were always strong enough to be able to like show up, like, and always believe in yourself. Not saying you know Chase that closely and if he believes that, but I know for me, if that would happen to me, I would be done. Like I would be done. Like if I tried going fast in practice and I wasn't able to get you, like it would mess me up like mentally. And I feel like somewhat knowing Chase a little bit, he does, that does bother him, but also hearing him, like he's just, you know, you're just like, either he's believing it or he's just hoping. But do you feel like overall, like this off season, this motocross season will affect him or not?
I think my personal opinion is that I think that Chase is very lucky that he's in a situation that he is and that he's going to a new team. Cause I think that that's the light at the end of the tunnel, right? Like I think that the sad thing about our sport, and we've lived this part of it, but like who was a Supercross champion? Do we even talk about it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like it's you're only as good as your last ride.
Yeah.
And currently we don't even acknowledge or understand or even think of Chase as our Supercross champion, which is the highest level of our sport.
Yeah.
You know, even though motocross and a 22-0, but in the big scheme of things, the Supercross title is the championship to win.
Yeah.
And so I think that Chase has to hang his hat on, he is the Supercross champion. You know, and again, like you said, I don't know him great, but I've been around him a little bit and I certainly see weaknesses and things like that. But during his mistakes he needs to fix. And I don't know that he's fixed that yet because he still made them in Supercross.
Yeah.
But he kept coming back, right? He didn't lay over. He did keep coming back. He kept fighting back and fighting back, you know, and it didn't matter the size of the crash or the, you know, or the small or how stupid the crash was. It just seemed like he kept coming back.
Yeah.
And so for me, I would, if I'm Chase Sexton, you have to kind of just turn everything that just happened off, be excited about the future, you know? And I think that our sport's silly in the fact that we really can't talk about where he's going, or it seems like we have been around it long enough to avoid announcing where he's going, but it is what it is, right? But to my knowledge, he's rode the bike as soon as last week. And so I think I showed up in the morning to watch the race and he walked out of the semi of his new team.
Yeah.
And so I think it shows where his head's at, right? I think it scares me as a fan that I'm interested to see the effort and the fight that he has for these three, you know, playoff races.
Yeah.
And I hope he fights hard.
Yeah.
I hope that Chase shows up and wants to win and kind of gets that chip on his shoulder where he wants to kind of like answer back to Honda and say, hey, like I'm still your guy, but you're losing me kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want that guy.
Yeah.
I don't want him to lay over and look forward to the future. Because it can go both ways, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I almost feel like that part will happen. And to your point, Chase is, I said, stubborn, you know, like, and he's able to, you know, you get beaten and he's still fighting back and his crashes, you know, I feel kind of like with you, I don't know if he's fixed that, you know, and the new team and new circumstances, like no matter what color bike or whatever bike, if he doesn't fix that, the same result's going to happen. So my biggest thing is more, I do think Chase is one of the most talented guys out there in this field. And when he's on and he does the things right, like he's just as good as Jet. It's just whether he actually looks himself in the mirror, figures that out. is going to determine to me whether he can win this title. Because again, I don't feel like the bike was holding him back. And I feel like the same thing is going to happen in the future. But if he corrected, like if he corrects that, then he goes into the off season correcting that. Then he feels like he's a new person. And just like having a new team, I think will help him. And I do believe just from his attitude, what he said on the podium, I think he will come out and fight for these next three races. Like, I don't think it's in there.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I think that Chase set the tone for his own outdoor season. Like, let's be honest, like practice, he slapped himself on the ground at Paula. And really from that way, you know, from then on, it just seemed like that was the tone. Like he, you know, I think after that weekend when he took two or three races off and he came back and it was like, he showed flashes, but whenever the flash was there, it was always with a, you know, a little tip over or something like that. And he just needs to get better at those. He needs to minimize those.
Yeah. Yeah. Just personally, what do you see like with that? Like, what do you kind of direct his crashes to? Whether, you know, is technique, or do you feel like maybe there is an issue with the bike or a little bit of both?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say without riding the bike, right? Like, I think that we all individually have our own needs.
Yeah.
From my understanding, the two bikes are very different between Jet and Chase's. I kind of have a different opinion. Like, I think that if you're in that place, like, I'd almost, like, I get what he's doing, because I think that we're sensitive little beings when we're young.
Yeah.
And you want everybody around you to be team you, not have to fight for that attention. So I fully understand that side of it. But I think in one, you know, perspective is that like that motorcycle is winning races, you know, and it's said to be very different to yours. I'd be like, I want that setup, you know? And it sounded like initially, you know, the Sexton family were basically like, we don't want Jet having our settings and basically like, you know, like normal things that we've all done before. But it sounds like Jet and his circle found something, right? Like, I think it's hard to not acknowledge that Jet looked considerably better and more comfortable on the bike. So considering the bike, it looks awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, Chase is, he just missed something. And whether it was the fall and the, you know, I think you also have to understand that a Supercross title is a hangover to that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's fair. You know, rolling, I think they had a weekend off and then rolling into outdoors, and he kind of went all in, you know, like, cause he was on his back foot. He was several points down, and it was like, let's make this decision, because right around that point, he made that decision of like, okay, Eli's ahead of me. Cooper's ahead of me. We're going to skip outdoor testing. We're going to go all in on this, you know, Supercross title. And
do you feel like that was true?
Meaning like, do I think that they skipped outdoor testing?
Yeah.
From everything I heard, it's true. I don't know if you know different, but I had heard that they basically had gone all in. I'm sure that once Eli was, which was only what, the second to last race, you know, at that point you kind of turn everything off and you quickly rearrange and you start outdoor testing. But
yeah. I think, I'm not going to say that, the bike, him not being ready for outdoors is the cause. I think the setup thing is valid. I think if I'm Chase, and I don't know this, and I'm not saying that what you're saying is wrong. I'm not even indicating that. I think if he wouldn't change, then what's been happening this year, like he should, like now, if that was the case, then I'd be like, well, I mean, I don't feel bad for you at all. Because if like, at the end of the day, like it's inches, you know, if I would never, as much as it would kill me, like if I knew you had something, I had an opportunity to do it, like I would not do it because of like, you just
like in our day, like we use the same tires, right? Like if I was winning all the races on a certain tire, you're going to try that damn tire.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, or you're going to ask for it. Cause back in then, I remember old Doug, you'd be like, hey,
yeah, I would.
It wasn't really like, just because it said a number didn't mean it was a tire, right? It was like 10 other numbers that were hidden that were the spec of the tire. And so it's funny that I remember those days. And I think that, and again, I think it goes back to the student of the game and why Jet is so clever.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I feel the same way about you know, Chase's ability to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, you got to have a crew. And I think that, again, as we talk about Jet, what makes him dominant is, I mean, he's good, but it's the whole package. The whole package makes you dominant. The people around you to be able to listen. I mean, even Dazzy being able to be like, no, I don't have the answers. I'm going to go find you the answer, son. You know, I'm going to find a Johnny O'Meara. I'm going to ask, you know, whoever to help us. Like, and so you got to have a person in your camp that believes that. And I don't know if the other one does, you know, and I've been a part of both of them, and I've got to know Jet recently, and I've been around Chase. So I think that's a lot of things that he would have to figure out. I know from Honda's standpoint, like, you know, I know they would give him every opportunity. So it really would be him, like, not like choosing it. And I think if that's the case, especially when you're like, I don't trust the motorcycle and it's a problem, it'd be different if you're like, yeah, no, it's pretty good. And you're just like, yeah, but he's saying that's one of the reasons. So if that's the case, then, that's, I mean, what are you expecting, really, honestly? But I guess my point was on the Supercross thing, I really just think, I mean, even the Supercross title, the way it happened, I don't even know if he was, because he even had to beat Cooper at that point. Like, he was down behind Cooper. So being all in is one thing. And yeah, he won the title, but it just happened so quickly that I don't know if you could just say, even the Supercross hangover, like, I've been like where Eli was, you know, dude, I've been in this thing since round one, and I slept on those off weekends of like, should we test motocross? No, I don't want to, you know, mess up my Supercross title. Like, there was a point right before we went to the off season, I mean, a few weeks off, that Chase was out of it, you know, and it should have been focused on the motocross. So I don't believe it was that. I just believe that he crashed. The same thing that was happening in Supercross happened outdoors. His, not
it's consistent for the last few years. Yeah. You know, I think that it doesn't matter if it's indoors or outdoors. It's a consistent issue that we're seeing.
Yeah. And I don't think he thought Jet would be as good as he was on that first one. And
I don't know that any of us did.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
He was pretty damn perfect.
Yeah. He's pretty perfect. He was perfect. So, yeah, I just wanted to ask you if you thought that, you know, again, what would transpire with Chase. You know, do you see anything like, yeah, we both kind of agree the new team, hopefully he'll kind of change some things up and he'll go into next year. I do think his mindset of being stubborn, is going to at least give him a chance to do that. I don't think he's given up, where sometimes we see guys that are dictated off starts. Like we talked in 250 class, like maybe Cooper a little bit, you know, if things don't go right in the beginning part of the race, he's done, you know, Justin Cooper, that is, where I don't think Chase is like that. He'll keep fighting, but you know, if that's the case with the whole, the bike setup, then you might as well not even show up, really.
While we're on the start subject, what do you think of Jet starts this year?
I mean, they
pretty much perfect, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Like that's what's like, when you look at him, and I know like, it seemed like he just be like, okay, we're watching this one. So let's talk about it. I watched this. I was on an airplane. I was burning out of the race while you were working away here.
Yeah.
But sure. When I seen this, I'm like, oh, this will be interesting, because he totally flinched, like, and not just a little bit, like a lot.
Goes, yeah.
And I 100% agree with everything you said. Like sometimes when you're just good and everything's going, it's crazy how much luck you get too, right? Because there's a lot of talent and a lot of skill involved right there. But when you really break what happened there, it's, man, for him to come out P2 after flinching that much on the start.
Yeah.
He came out smelling like roses on that one.
Yeah. And I think, what was your question about the start? Like,
I would say that like, as like one of Jet's weaknesses in the 250 class, where like he was always a really good starter for how big he was.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think he was heavy. He was just taller. Right.
Yeah.
And so he always assumed bigger than maybe what his weight actually is. I don't know his weight, but, like I would just say that personally speaking, like he starts this year, like, I mean, it was all the way. I didn't even, you were in the booth, but it was like 6-7 races in before he didn't lead a lap. The whole, like every race, you know what I mean? Like he was so impressive on the starts, and it's hard to beat a guy that's clever, that's fast, that's fit, that starts first every time.
Yeah. And we know, and I mean, you race them, like the Honda's always been like, since 2009, I think it was. Like
they, yeah, when 0-10. they went to their hydraulic clutch.
Yeah.
Like I know that I inherited the factory bike at the end of Supercross in 2011, and then raced that bike in 11 outdoors, and it was the, you know, the HRC factory bike, and to this day one of my favorite motocross bikes. Like just awesome.
You know,
ripped off the start. I remember, for the most part, not even really, like you would just pick the best gate because you knew that if you just pick the best gate and, like, you know, like a lot of times it's position.
Yeah.
Back then it was just like, oh, this one's nice and smooth. It didn't matter. It was inside, outside. And I'm just like, we're going to crush this start. Like it is, like the Hondas are really good on the start.
Yeah. So he's got that part. And I said this weekend, I think what I've seen throughout Jet in his whole starts is whether he gets a jump like that. It's kind of like, have you been in many last chance LCQs?
Towards the end of my career, unfortunately. I actually, 2018, I broke my ankle, came in with zero prep, started, you know, got my cast off 2 weeks before Anaheim, and I was terrible. And anyway, I wasn't right. A lot of last chances.
Well, all right, I won't even bring that part up. But the mentality, what I was going to say is, like, if you're a guy, like the couple of last chances I was in when I was winning races, like I had to get a start. And I say this with my brother. I said, if you watch a guy, a top guy in the last chance, he's going to hold a shot. Like he's going to be up front. And the reason he's going to do that, because he knows, like, he has no choice. You know, you don't want to be going down or missing it. And I feel like the Jet this year, he's making his starts. Like, even if he doesn't get a jump, like all the winning he's done, he just feels like he belongs up front. So what we saw this weekend, there was some luck into it. I think the two guys next to him, they got stuck. Then he had the box, so he had that gap. So he was able to, like, the other guys, he still was able to get them covered, had the gap. But he made a start. And then in the second corner, he was leading. I just feel like with that, when you watch a guy in the last chance or, like, maybe for a mud race, you know you got to get a start. Like, if you're in championship, you're going to figure out
how to
get a start.
It's a mindset. Like, it comes back to the mindset thing.
I believe that's where he's at right now. So that's why he continues to get the start. A fact with Hondas are good. But we talked about, all right, this guy, that guy. And Jet was 20-0. And then now, like, he comes into the last race, Chase's hometown. Chase is going to be close. Chase is going to do this, but Chase has been doing exactly what his first name been doing all year, chasing. And I feel like Jet has been perfect on making sure that he lives up to his first name in chasing him. And at the end of the day, he met Dylan Ferrandez. He got AC. We keep talking about Tomac and his Achilles, but what Jet's been doing is starting in front of him and just winning. And every weekend, we keep saying a lot of stuff, but everything remains the same. And just like the previous 20, he went 21-0, and then he went 22-0. We're going to have to do him something for special. But before you hit that cold, before you hit it, I just want to say, kid, it's been a phenomenal year. I told you, you're going to go down on the course. Your streak will end there. But today, you're still perfect. And no matter who's out there racing, no matter who's coming, Kenny was close, but he's on the couch. He's over there hanging out with this dude in the World Supercross Series. All good. He don't want none of that fire, right? He don't want that smoke. Congrats, kid. It's been cool to watch. I've been able to call these races and be close and get to meet you personally. What you've done is phenomenal. And I want, before I hit that neck burn, just want to say, dude, straight up, legit. Even though you didn't get the stew moment of the year, Hayden Deegan got that. You're going to get another one. Hit it from Cole.
Suntan, next on fire.
Yeah, Cole threw that one in there for you. So from all of us, my boy Chad, congrats, kid. It's been short, nothing phenomenal. It's been, been a perfect year. Like, literally, it's been perfect. So congrats, kid. Better go out there and win that money next week, a couple weeks. Chase can be coming out to that ass. All I know that much. But anyways, people, well, that was it from round 28. I hope you guys enjoyed that. But before we go, you know what we got to do? My favorite part, your favorite part. It's going to be an interesting part. Stews and Stewed. We'll be right back.
They say an object in motion tends to stay in motion. We test that idea on a daily basis. Motion and experimentation. Motors and manpower. We continue to evolve and thrive. So whether you climb or cross over, find your own line, or pin it wide open, as long as you're moving in a way that gives you what you need, we'll be here for you.
Hey guys, what's up? It's James Stewart. As you guys know, Athletic Greens is a proud partner of our show. They've been a sponsor of this for a while. It's a nutritional drink that supports the immune system. With 75 high-quality ingredients, that gives me the key to daily nutrients and long-term gut health. They have good travel packs that I take with me on the road, and I took it this weekend, which I needed, which gives me energy and helps my immune system because I'm flying all over the place, can get sick a lot. AG1 helped me with that. And for, I mean, it's only $3 a day. So it's a good deal if you ask me. If a solution is what you need for your supplement routine, then Athletic Greens is giving you a 1-year supply of free vitamin D and 5 travel packs. So make sure you go to athleticgreens.com/Bubba's World. Did you hear me? athleticgreens.com/Bubba's World. Go check it out, peeps. All right, people, you know what time it is. My favorite time, your favorite time, Oakley, Stute, and Stute. Now, like we always do, even though this whole show is different, but we're going to do it like we always do. We're going to go with Stute. What is that? Somebody who does it better than the rest. Somebody could be a Stute because, look, you just look better. Sometimes you pull that dude's girlfriend and you hang out with her, you take her home, whatever it is. Or sometimes you just go perfect. Sometimes you just do whatever it takes to do whatever it takes. And to me, that makes no sense, but that's a Stute. So my first person, of course, is Hunter Lawrence. Now, look, people, before you say anything, I know he didn't win. I think he got like ninth or something, and he was like in the middle of the pits. He actually looked like a Kyle Lewis out there, somebody hole shotting and then just whipping it off the triple because they got a hole shot. He was out there whipping it in the main, the second moto, running a ninth place, happy. So why you give him the Stute? Well, of course, people, he's your champion. And I know he didn't win this weekend, but he won the whole thing. And Hunter Lawrence, first off, you a Stute. You got to get a stupendous Stute, a special one. But, dude, you killed it this year. Everybody knows you the best. When they come back up, yeah, you know, you let Joe come in here. You got Hayden Deegan, like, whatever. You got Brian Deegan out there like, ah, yeah, it's the first time. Well, the first time they saw me win this championship this year. And I'm just doing it better than everybody else and what I got. So hit it for him again, Cole, for us. Hit it for him.
Suntan. Next on fire.
And your next on fire, but you a stupendous Stute. So Hunter Lawrence, congratulations, kid. You're the 250 motocross champ. I almost said supercross, but you that too. 2023 has been a Lawrence brother. You might even get Jason Lawrence coming up at your door. Who knows what's happening? So congratulations, kid. And now my next person is your brother, Jet. Now I know, Hunter, you might be disappointed. You won the championship. That's cool. That's cool. And Jet, I know you look up to your older brother, and he's been there for you. But, I mean, right now, he's going to be your competition, and you might be looking down on him. I mean, a couple weeks ago, I didn't even know if he had a key to the house anymore. He was, like, losing. He was getting smoked by Hayden Deegan. He was falling over in the shadows. He just didn't look right, did he? He had some rib problems. Like, he had barbecue, whatever. But he came back. He won the championship. But what you did something short and special. Not even Hunter has been able to do that. But I'm sure he's happy for you, just like you're happy for him. Jet Lawrence, you went perfect. I've been saying you've been Stute every single weekend. You even went perfect on my Stute list. I mean, that's a Stute itself. So Jet Lawrence, you did it. You Chase, he came out. Dylan, he came out. Dylan came out and hit the ground pretty damn hard the first moto. Second moto, he ain't want nothing to do to that. But Jet Lawrence, you a stupendous Stute. Again, kid, you're perfect. I'm not going to sit here and waste much time on it. You already know what you are. You a Stute. We got a special one. Chat, I'm gonna give it to you, son. Who's your Stute?
Ooh, I would say that I don't think it's fair that I just jump on your train here and steal it away. So I think I'm gonna take the rookie. I was impressed with Hayden in the 250 class, really stepping it up, and really getting momentum after what I think was a really bad weekend in Millville, and firing back with really some Stute-like speed at Washougal.
Damn,
that was fun to see. So I'll go with Hayden in 250.
Hayden, that might be the best Stute you've had all year. Not you, but that might be the most dominant Stute out of anybody. I mean, Chad Reed came in the house and said, like, you a Stute in Stute's house. I mean, kid, if that don't help you out, nothing will. So, Hayden Deegan, from Chad himself, from us, you a stupendous Stu. And even Chad said that. Damn, I don't know what it is. So that brings me to my next one, people. Stu, pissed off. Pissed off because, look, you've been struggling doing this show. Pissed off because I'm still confused as hell why this dude's in my house and we sitting in the movie theater. You sit here and watch him and, like, not sleep in the next room. But everything's all right. So instead of going Stu, even though I think you do got one that's a little, maybe a little disappointing. Actually, I'm going to give you that before I go to this one. Who's your Stu pissed off?
I would say my Stu is Vial. I expected a two-time MX2 champion to come in and be really, really compatible. And he just didn't really show up like I thought he would. And I was disappointed. I expected more.
Tom, what's up? What's up? Like, you came out and you, I thought you were going to, I'm with him. I thought you were going to be a little bit better, but then I saw you ride and you did better. And then this weekend, I didn't see that. Like, I didn't see you being as good as you was this weekend. I didn't think this was a European style track, but maybe I wasn't up on my Q's and P's like this dude was. Cause he said, like, well, damn, I thought he was going to be pretty good. So Tom Vial, I mean, dude, you got Chad mad at you, like thinking that, come on, you disappointed. And I'm with it. I thought you were going to win more, but hell, at least you got one moto in there. My boy is Sorby. My French crowd, y'all going to have to represent the motocross nation, which y'all have a strong team. But Tom Vial, you stewed. You straight up stewed. But where I was going was confused. Confused as hell because none of this makes any sense. I almost cussed people. I almost cussed, and that would have been bad because I would have had to cut it out or Cole would have to bleep it out. But this is confused as hell because I'm trying to just dialect what's happening. I'm trying to dissect what is happening. People, look who's in this chair. Look who's in the chair. Like, you want to talk about all lives matter, black lives matter, white lives matter, Martians life matter, orange like cold life matter. Who cares? Like, we all come together because me and this cat, we sit in the same room, same people. So we all should connect. And to me, all our fans and James Stewart, Chad Reed fans, and I'm going to talk to him about Unadilla. I'm going to talk to him why he took my ass out in Atlanta in 11. Still don't understand that one, but, you know, it is what it is. It's confusing as hell. But look, so James Stewart, I'm confused. Stewart fans, Reed fans, we confused. But let it go, people. Let it go. We daddies now. We enjoying this. So maybe we are Stews and Reeds. Anything can happen. We look like Trump in his mugshot. Just presidential, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know where the hell I went for that. Did you see his mugshot?
I seen it. It's the best mugshot I've seen.
It was pretty dope. I don't know. It came to the suit. People, that was it. I didn't even finish it.
You said you were confused.
I'm confused. Look, this whole thing confused. It was like last weekend. I was trying to finish the show, but you wouldn't let me finish the show. Between your coughing and this dude showing up and me being just off the weather and then this boring 450 race, 250 race, Hunter whipping it, Hayden Deegan sending it, falling from the sky. He's got the Stu moment of the year. And then you got a Stu from Chad Reed himself. Chad Reed said, you were Stu. It just makes no sense at all. Makes no sense. But this whole show makes sense. This year has been senseless. And with Jet Lawrence going perfect, everything's up. Eli, he did find his Achilles. Cooper Webb, I think he did find his way to where he needs to go. Chase Sexton, I think he's still walking off the podium. But we'll be back in a couple weeks because we off next week. That was it from round 28. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going there. Look, I want to give a shout out to all the TV people. Thank you for all the love. That was cool. Enjoyed it. Got the insights. I went to go push my cough button. Having this dude here, it's like my Jason Wagon just crushing me. But honestly, wait, there's more to come between me and this cat. We'll have a full-on interview to get some of those questions that you want to get to and I want to get to. But Chad Reed, honestly, dude, I appreciate you coming on the show. Hope you'll come back after this crazy-ass like segment. But it's been good to wrap with you, get your thoughts, and overall, just last final thoughts on the season, where you at. And then you said your son is going possibly pro next year?
No, not pro. He's in 13, but we're going Supercross. We're going to do some Supercross in Australia. I brought a Chad Reed 85cc cup class down there. So I was really lucky as a kid. I got to do 80s. They race with the professionals. So that's why we're going to fix up one of your Supercross tracks and get my kid out there. And then once you see him ride, Then we're going to put you in some gear and we're going to bust out some dirt bikes and
yeah, whatever.
We'll see if you still got it.
I might not have it, but or I'll do still we, give it.
Before we wrap the show up, I feel like, you know, Jet's pretty perfect, but I feel like we need to take him on in golf or something. What do you think? I think we brush up, get to the range a little bit, and then me and you versus the Lawrences.
What I'm fine that. You hear that?
I think we got him.
Y'all hear that? I mean, you were going to lose anyway, Jet. I told you on the thing you were going to lose anyway, but with this dude, you're definitely going to lose. So I'd seen his game. Yeah, I'll tighten it up. We'll be good. Like, hopefully, you're going to need as many strokes as much as I lost all this weight. Man, you know, I got on the scale yesterday.
You got to bring up weight. Come on, man. You got to give me the tips is what's...
I need to go back and start training. Man, stress is a hell of a thing. I tell you that much. I don't even know, dude. I was in the 30s. Anyways, that should be in the confused. But yeah, so Jet, me and Chad Reed teaming up together, which sounds strange as hell, but anything in the world is fine. We're taking you guys on the course. So I don't know if they want any of that action. Probably don't, but
we'll play him at Javita. I know my way around there. We're good. Yeah. I spent 18 years there.
All right. Well, there you got it. But also we should do maybe you'll see maybe me and him riding together or something. Get a little Tate out, do something.
See, it's working. Yeah. It was a hard no. Now it's amazing.
Yeah. I think you need to talk more, Chad.
I like this. I like where this is going.
I'm fine. I'm like that guy that shows up with the big old box man and just brand new bike.
I was here last week. I spent 3 hours with Pops and it's funny. It's really awesome. When we do get to do this podcast, it's crazy how similar our kid lives were.
And yeah.
It was pretty cool. I spent 3 hours.
So you didn't have a childhood either?
Yeah. Nope. It went by like a blur. I wished it away. Yeah. I just want to go pro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we got a lot to talk about, man. But honestly, I appreciate you coming on. This is cool. We had a chance to hook up about a year and a half ago and go golfing. So now he's going to come out here, take over my property from never being in Haines City to being out here and owning the thing. It's going to be good. So,
cool.
Yeah. All right, people. That was it from the special episode of the Rewind Show with Chad Reed. And that was it from round 28, where you had your champions, Jet Lawrence and Hunter Lawrence. And hey, Deegan, still falling from the sky. So hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll see you in a couple weeks when the playoffs, we're talking about the playoffs, is starting. And we'll see what happens there. Till then, I'm not going to walk off because I have to walk past them. We'll see you when we see you.